Good morning, everyone. Good Monday morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, A Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Sandy W., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, June 14th, and we will be reading from the Big Book, as we always do, wonderfully. And today we are on page 64. We are reading the first paragraph. And it begins, therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. We're moving into step four. Today's readers. So today we have Martha M. reading the 12 steps, Dory P. reading the 12 traditions. We have our readers of the text, our Eileen M., who will read page 64, that first paragraph. Deb E. will read page 164, A Vision for You. And we have Lois P. in the background, backing us up if needed. And then we'll have Lorraine M. as our newcomer greeter and Leslie M. for announcements. So the reference numbers. Okay, so yesterday's Sunday special edition, that was June 13th, the share ID was 17,144. That's 17144. Then for today, Monday, June 14th, the earlier meeting at 7 a.m. Eastern Time, the share ID is 17,147, 17147. Okay, OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So now I'm going to ask Martha M. to read our 12 steps. Good morning, Martha.
Good morning. This is Martha M. from Connecticut. I'm a recovered anorexic, bulimic, and compulsive overeater. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service. Have a great day.
Oh, thank you, Martha. Thanks for doing that service for us. Okay, so now I will ask Dory P. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Dory.
Thank you, Sandy. Dory P. in Georgia, grateful, compulsive overeater. Our traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do service.
Oh, thank you, Dory. Thanks for doing that service for us. Okay, so this is how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. I will be timing, and I'll say time, of all things, when those 3 minutes are up. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the big book mean to us. So to share, press star 1 to unmute. Then once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass and press star 1 again to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. So today we resume our study of the big book. Again, we are on page 64. We're reading just that first paragraph, which begins, "Therefore we started upon a personal inventory." So I am going to ask Eileen M. to begin the reading. Good morning, Eileen.
Good morning. This is Eileen M., recovered compulsive overeater in Lebanon, New Hampshire. Okay, therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step 4. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. Yeah, I love this. I've always liked this analogy of, you know, taking a business inventory and, you know, to a personal inventory, you know, personal inventory being an itemized list of traits. So it's just, you know, what I'm being asked to do is just to make a list of all the ways that I did not take responsibility for my mistakes. You know, it's just, again, you know, just looking at what are the thoughts and actions that are causing me pain and that are making my life unmanageable. You know, and I was just thinking back before I came into OA, I had no idea how my actions affected other people. I just didn't take responsibility for anything. I was always focusing on what the other person had done. And, you know, I wrote many 4 steps while I was in OA in different ways, but it was not until I inventoried my thinking, because that was life-changing, is I had to look at what my thoughts were, because that's really where the disease starts, you know, and I would compulsively overeat over stories that I told myself about the people or the situations that I resented, you know, and that's where, you know, that's what caused me to overeat, was the buildup of human emotions that were caused by these resentments and these fears that I was not looking at. You know, and this step requires rigorous honesty and courage. You know, there's a lot of courage here, but, you know, it says in the previous paragraph, it's a strenuous effort, you know, to bring these things out into the light so that they're not blocking my relationship with God. You know, is that, you know, what are the secrets? You know, I'm so grateful for this step because, you know, it talks about a lot in this book, you know, if we want to live successfully, you know, this is what we have to do every day. You know, so once, you know, every day I take my inventory and just look at, you know, okay, well, what is causing my life to be unmanageable today? I'm so grateful to be on this line. Thank you for letting me do service. Pass.
Oh, thank you, Eileen M. Thank you so much for doing that service and your share. So I'm going to open the lines now to begin sharing. Again, we are on page 64, and we read the first paragraph that begins, therefore we started upon. And although we value everyone's experience, we just ask that you limit your shares to every third day so that others can get a chance to share too. So if you will give me your first name, the first initial of your last name, and your state, I'll take a lift to get the sharing going. So who wants to comment on what was read today?
Tamara C.
Deb E. Okay, I think that was Tamara C. and Deb E.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Kathleen O.
Maria C.
Okay, I got Kathleen and Maria, I think it was. And what was the last name?
Tova
Maria
E.
Maria C. Got it.
You have Tova E.
Oh, Tova E. I've got you. Was there someone else that came in? Let me tell you who I have. I have Tamara, Deb, Kathleen, Maria, and Tova. Did I miss anyone? Well, let's go ahead and get started with that lineup, and we'll get last initials in case I don't have them right, and states as we go along. So, Tamara C., go right ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Tamara C. I'm grateful to be recovered, and I'm in California. So, the sentence that kind of spoke to me out of this morning was, that I cannot fool myself about values. It kind of made me think about, I didn't think that my defects had value. This is what I thought. Like, I didn't want to be full of all this selfishness. In fact, I thought it was like my job to try to be a better person and get rid of all this. But as I really pause and look at how did step four inventory help me uncover what did I really think was valuable. And my sponsor encouraged me to look at like both sides of the defects and see that, you know, maybe at some point it did have value for me. Maybe it helped me survive or get through. So just taking a look at like fear. I used to think that fear had value. Like, I mean, fear can help you survive. Being, you know, afraid of something helps you avoid it. And my fears taught me all kinds of self-seeking behaviors that perhaps had value, but step four inventory helped me uncover the truth and see the facts that, wow, those fears no longer have value for me. They are the problem, not the solution. And same with all my defects, my being defensive, being demanding, distancing, my resentments, being angry. Perhaps these helped me at some point, and perhaps they have a certain value for some people, but at certain times, but I, as an addict, I cannot afford these anymore. They do not have value for me. I have to see the real value is that they hurt me. They cause harm to me. And so this was really good. I wasn't able to get rid of them in step four, but I was able to uncover the truth and see, this anger, it is not serving me. This bullying myself, it is not helpful to me. These are things that I can see our stock in trade, that it's time to let them go and let my higher power take them away through the rest of the steps and heal me. And every day I'm still in that process. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, Tamara C. from California. Thanks for sharing with us. So up will be Deb E., and she'll be followed by Kathleen L. Good morning, Deb. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Hi, this is Deb E., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. And I heard someone in the meeting a few days ago address newcomers, and I tend to forget sometimes about how difficult. I've always loved the Big Book, and I'm glad that I had it from the beginning. But when I was brand new in program, it was hard for me to sometimes kind of translate it into vocabulary that really spoke to me. And so when I was looking at this paragraph today, I rewrote it with compulsive overeater in mind. And it just, I just wanted to read it if it would help anybody who's new and looking at this and going like, why are they talking about inventory in the business? And, you know, that's the way I was thinking in the beginning. Like, I just don't get this language. And so it would go something like this. A compulsive overeater who takes no regular inventory usually does not recover. Taking a personal inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about ourselves. One object is to disclose fears, resentments, wrongs, and character defects, to be willing to be rid of them promptly and without regret. If a compulsive overeater is to be recovered, he cannot fool himself about values. And I was really intimidated by step four, the first few rounds of it that I did. And now I really like it, and I really welcome it. I'm in a regular step, like a committed step study, so I regularly work the steps to just do them over and over. And it's really incredible how much comes up even after years of doing the same, you know, the same process, it's doing the inventory, but it just keeps getting deeper and I keep getting a better understanding of who I am. And I like how it says it's a fact finding and fact facing. It's like, we're just trying to get more information. We're just looking at the facts. It's not, I don't need to get all worried and scared and all worked up about it. I'm just trying to understand my behavior as a compulsive overeater better, because that behavior, you know, permeates everything. And so step four is just, it's been really, really useful for me to do. And it's, I guess what I'd like to say is, like, you know, if anyone's kind of on the fence about doing it and afraid, it can seem scary at first, but it's so worthwhile. It's very, very worthwhile to do. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, Deb E. from Israel. Thank you for that share. So next up, we will have Kathleen O., and she's followed by Maria C. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Sandy. Thanks for your service this morning. It's Kathleen O., recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. And step four, let the fun begin, right? So we're given this analogy of a business taking commercial inventory to disclose their damaged or unstable goods and to be honest about that inventory. And that's exactly what we have to do in step four. It's a fact-finding and fact-facing process. And it was, you know, discovering how, for me, truly how my selfishness and self-centeredness, along with dishonesty and being closed-minded, brought not only me pain, but it brought others pain. So, you know, being human, everyone has resentments and fears. But the person without this disease, they just feel badly, but not so with a compulsive overeater. You know, prior to the 12 steps, when I had resentments and fears, I would eat and binge. I wouldn't just feel badly, I'd eat and binge. And I was wreaking havoc on my body. You know, eating was my best option, and it was really my only solution. So talk about insanity. And I just can't risk hanging on to resentments. Not only will they make me want to eat my alcoholic foods and binge, but I feel awful emotionally. I feel awful spiritually. And they truly block me off from any connection to a higher power. So when I wrote out my step four, I was told to write down all the what ifs and if onlys. You know, if only my mother hadn't gone back to work when I was 2 years old. Excuse me. You know, what if I hadn't done this? Or what if I hadn't said that? So a personal inventory is making a list of all our resentments. And we also throw in there taking account of sexual conduct and our fears. And in my personal inventory, I had to include not only what happened to me, but what my reactions, you know, my reactions to what happened. And surprise, surprise, my reaction was almost always selfish and self-centered. And, you know, that continues to be today when I do a, when I, you know, take inventory of resentments. They're almost always, I want it to be my way. So step three tells us our troubles, and it tells us that we think they're basically of our own making. And step four is about being honest. So step three is easier than step four. And we tend to lose a lot of people in step four. So it's really important to just keep going, you know. Being honest, I did realize there was one common denominator, and that was me. You know, I was the cause of my problems. And the freedom that comes from step four is truly worth it. So, you know, resentments cause unhappiness. Today, I must be free of resentments and anger. I must be free of fear. And I forgot to time myself, so I know you'll tell me when it's time, Sandy. So, you know, there's
it
nothing
is time.
Better.
Okay. Sorry.
I will stop there. Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you, Kathleen. I was just starting to unmute to say that. So your timing ended up being perfect without you even knowing it.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you. So next up is Maria C., followed by Tova E. So Maria, go right ahead. Good morning.
Hi, this is Maria T., not C.
Oh, thank you for that correction. I got it, Maria.
Yeah, it's okay. It's no problem. I'm in Norway, and thank you for the shares. It was a great paragraph to share on. And just wanted to say that, you know, thinking about the newcomer actually and having, you know, sponsored people who are terrified of doing a step four and think, oh my God, you know, I'm not going to be able to do this and I need to take my time. And, you know, and for me, it has been the most freeing experience that I've ever had. And it really does work. You know, I just really felt that to take responsibility for my part and things and to be able to see the things that I can change rather than trying to focus on what others are doing and what, you know, what I can't change in them has been tremendous. And it's also given me a lot of peace, you know, to know that I can take responsibility, that I have a choice. And I have a program which gives me directions in black and white that shows me how I can deal with situations as they arise. And, you know, as I go through my life, there's things come up all the time and, you know, fears or resentments or things I'm struggling with, maybe something that's coming up a lot from the past. You know, and I have a set of directions today that I can look at and share it and deal with it systematically so that I'm not trying to control the outcome. It's down to my higher power that's going to control the outcome. And it really does work. I mean, sometimes I think, oh, I'm not going to do it. I can't. It's not worth doing it, you know. Oh, that's only a little fear. That's only a little problem. But actually, when I physically do it, something miraculous happens and it frees me up from trying to control the outcome and trying to control what's going on in my life. Sometimes I, you know, obviously naturally I get worried about things and people, but I know that in this process that I'm not in charge, you know, my higher power is, and he has much more ability to deal with things over that I can't deal with. So, and I forgot to time myself, Sandy, I'm sorry, but with that, I'll pass.
Oh, thank you, Maria T. You still had time on the clock, no problem. And that was Maria T. from Norway. Thank you so much. So next up, we have Tova E., I believe, is what I wrote down at least, and then I'll be able to take some more names. So good morning,
hi.
Tova, go right ahead.
Thanks. This is Tova E. from Illinois, grateful, trying to recover compulsive overeater. So happy I found this meeting in the 12 steps a few months ago, because the last few months have been really challenging for me personally. My husband's been suffering from a horrible depression. He was in the hospital for about a week and a half, and they released him, and I feel like they released him too early, and it was a horrible weekend, and he's still going through some really serious medical treatments a couple times a week that I need to take him to, and I totally had a blowout on Friday. I just lost it, and I'm grateful for the 12 steps because it helped me recover. He had a temper tantrum. I walked out of the house and actually called the helpline because I was so frustrated with his agitation. He groans and grunts and makes noises and is miserable, and it's hard to live with. And I did some 12-step readings, and I listened to a tape last night. And with the fourth step, I realized that, you know, the personal inventory is I'm looking, what can I do? What does my higher power want of me? Why is he sending me this experience to go through? And I realized that this is an opportunity for me to grow. This is an opportunity for me to be more compassionate with my husband and to be kinder. And I have to view this as a challenge that I can get through. And I don't know, hearing things like, oh, I'm so selfish, or we're so selfish, that always triggers me for some reason with the fourth step. And I feel like for me, it's better to turn it around and say, what can I do that's positive? What can I do to help someone else? What can I do for another person? How can I grow in my character to handle this situation better than I've been handling it? So I'm happy to be on the meeting. I hope to keep praying that my higher power will give me the strength to handle this situation with love, compassion, and kindness, and that I don't lose my temper again. But I'm human, and I know I need to make progress, not perfection, and I really appreciate the love and strength of the group. And with that, I'll pass.
Oh, thank you, Tova E. from Illinois. Thanks for sharing. So for anyone that may have joined late or just wasn't listening, she said lovingly, of course, we are on page 64. We read the first paragraph, which begins, therefore we started upon. And although we value everyone's experience, we just ask that you limit your shares to every third day so that everyone gets a chance to share their experience too. So who else wants to share today?
Larry G.
Audrey M. J.
Okay, I got Larry and Audrey and Donna, but I think there was someone else in there. Who did I miss?
Mitris J.
Mitris? Is that what?
Yes, Mitris? That is correct. Yes.
Mitris, got it. And then I think I heard a gentleman.
And Stephen G.
Stephen, gotcha, Stephen. So and I have Larry. Oh, and Raquel. Okay, great. That's a great lineup. Let's go with that. We've got Larry, Audrey, Donna, Mitris, Stephen, and Raquel. Okay, Larry G., if you want to just give us your state and then go right ahead with your share. Thank you.
Thank you for your service. You're doing a really good job moderating. My name's Larry G., and I'm a recovered compulsive eater from the state of California. Oh, wow. You know, this fourth step is, it's just, when I did my first fourth step in 1981, I got to see for the first time how the world dominated because of my selfishness, self-centeredness. And it was very emotional. It was very emotional. I remember driving home, and I had to pull the car over. I couldn't stop crying because it was the first time I took responsibility for my life, and could you see how goddamn wrong I was about most things? And the same is true today. If you don't have an emotional response after doing this four step and giving it to your sponsor or minister or therapist, then something's not quite right, because this is not just about filling out a change of address form with a utility company. This is an inventory, unlike the inventories that businesses take. Businesses take inventories, and if they don't look at what's unsaleable, they will eventually go bankrupt. Well, we go bankrupt. I'm bankrupt spiritually, emotionally, and physically as a result of my self-centeredness, my resentments, my fears, my pride. Get to look at this maybe for the first time. And if I go too long without doing it, and a 10-step is based on this, if I don't do one of these major inventories a year and then do my 10-step regularly, I will be bankrupt. And for us, it's to die. Corporations go out of business. But we can die, not only metaphorically, but also physically die from this disease. My mom died from this disease at age 52, died from this disease. So I've got both ways, dad, alcoholic, mom, compulsive eater. And so when I do the fourth step, it's not just about me. This is what I love about the steps. We take this out into the world, because for the first time, if I'm coughing up my wrongs, then that helps me to be compassionate to other people, because I can see how I point a finger to other people. I have four pointing back at me. And now I begin to develop a sense of compassion for people and the world I live in. True tolerance of people. Love and true tolerance is my code. I take that in the world, and I've seen four steps that I've done, doing this follow-up of the 6th and 7th, 8th and 9th, where it's healed relationships. It's healed my family. It's healed friendships that were just torn apart, shredded apart because of my resentments, my self-centeredness, my fear, that were now healed. I'm seeing this with my daughters, and how
time.
My mind was so fogged up with flour that I was no longer, I wanted so much from them, and at the fourth step, I was able to heal those relationships. Thank you so much, and everybody have a great day. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Larry G. from California. Thank you very much for sharing with us. So next up is Audrey, followed by Donna. And Audrey, I just need your last initial and the state, if you'd like to give that to us. Go right ahead. I think I heard an Audrey, but we're not hearing you. If you're there, you may need to press star one.
This is Audrey MP, and I'm calling from Southern California. Can I be heard?
Great. Yes, you can. Great. Go right ahead. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Team Monday, and thank you to everyone who shared before me. I remember my first fourth step. Oof. I just needed to do it. I guess I'm speaking to the person that perhaps has never really written one and doesn't understand one, and it's really just getting everything pen to paper. And I remember, I remember at the time I had those four columns that are in the book, and I didn't have the vocabulary. I didn't even know how I felt. I only knew how to be angry. And it really, with the loving grace of a sponsor, I was able to, define how I felt. And it's been years. I've been in OA for 28 years of abstinence from my eating disorder, bulimia. I'm working rigorously every day to be entirely abstinent. And today I have like six columns. I have to look at my old ideas and then what my new ideas would be like. And I had just done a little mini fourth step about 2 months ago. And in reading, it took an hour and a half to review just my first resentment, because I had so many old ideas. We had to look at the old ideas and inventory the old ideas. So I heard somebody say, there was five entries in that fourth step. And, just the first one, this program, it just takes so much time, the dedication, that I need to have to get better every day. Like, I just want to get better. I just want to be abstinent. I love this 10-step thing we do here in Vision for You, the generosity of people giving away time and just to be really clear and focused on our feelings. I'm going to say this before I stop. I'm going through an incredibly, incredibly difficult time. And I've had to turn the resentment around to loving grace and duty. I have a duty as a daughter. No matter what my mother did or didn't do for me, I have a duty as a daughter. And I am riddled with how people have treated her, what I'm really learning about her. And it involves, you know, property, her trust, her family, my stepfamily. It's messy. It is messy. And I'm just in constant contact. And so if you get a call from me and you have an extra minute, I've got a lot of things to unpack.
Time.
And I don't want it to show up in my food. And I thank you for my time with all of you today.
Oh, thank you, Audrey MP from California. Thank you very much for sharing. So next we have Donna, followed by Mitris. And Donna, we'll need your last initial and state as well. Go right ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Donna B, as in boy, calling from Denver, Colorado. My name is spelled D-A-N-A, but pronounced Donna. I am a recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic. And this metaphor of shopping, of an inventory, of a store, has me thinking about the difference between shopping at TJ Maxx or Marshall's versus a place like Nordstrom's. And the thing with TJ Maxx or Marshall's is that they have piles and piles and piles and piles of clothing to go through. And you have to sort and you have to sort and you have to sort and you have to sort. And you can't really go in there thinking, I want a black shirt with a V-neck that comes to a sort. Like, you can't go in there really thinking, I want something specific, because there's just so much stuff in there. You kind of just have to settle for what you get based on how much energy you're willing to exert in sorting and sorting and sorting. And I find that exercise to be exhausting. Like, I'm not a person who finds pleasure in the digging and the searching through piles of clothes. And then on the other hand, there's Nordstrom's, which, by the way, I never shop at, but I think of as the luxury experience of shopping, where you know, there's a few items that have been specifically chosen and set aside to be the contemporary style of the moment, and there's even a personal shopper to help pick the most appealing and suitable outfit for the occasion. And so with that metaphor, I think about, you know, when they talk about that clutter, in my mind, it's very much like a TJ Maxx or Marshall's that just has not been thinned out. There's just so much clothing bogged into the store. And if I want to find something of value in there, I have to dig and dig and dig and dig. And it's just hard to find, ultimately, the truth. And this, the big book tells me that I cannot differentiate the true from the false. And I live in a state of delusion. So the fourth step, this inventory process, is so critical because it gives me a chance at seeing the truth. And with that, I will pass.
Oh, thank you, Donna B. from Colorado. And that's Donna spelled D-A-N-A. Thank you very much for sharing. So now we will have Mitris, followed by Stephen. So Mitris, give us your last initial and state, and then go ahead with your share.
Thank you. Good morning. Glad to be here. Mitris J. from Michigan. Wow, the step four was very an awakening process for me to really be honest about my behavior, my way of thinking and doing. And as I wrote down my resentment, just sticking with this is my inventory that I'm doing and my part in things, even though I felt that I've been very wronged and very hurt by the people that I had on my list that I was resenting. And as things continue to come up with my part in things, I was trying to play God with people. I wanted people to be the way that I wanted them to be, to make me happy, so I wouldn't feel uncomfortable in my life. I wanted them to be a certain way. And that's playing God. You know, I'm not anyone's God. I need a higher power. I'm not even my God. I need a higher power to believe in myself and to help me be the best person that I can be. So when I admitted my wrongs and what I needed to do, my thinking started to changing in a place of love for the people that I was resenting. Again, just focusing on my part, not theirs, my part. This was my inventory. So I feel such a freedom and such a love right now. It's a one day at a time, because sometimes I want to go back to that old way of thinking, and then I'm only human as well. But if I'm coming out of a place of love, that is so much freedom for me than to be coming out of a place of resentment and control. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Oh, thank you, Mitris J. from Michigan. Thank you for sharing. So next up, we have Stephen G., followed by Raquel. Good morning, Stephen. Go right ahead and give us your state if you'd like. I think I heard a Stephen G., but we're not hearing you, so you may need to press star one.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes, now we can. Thank you. Go right ahead.
Okay. I'm Stephen G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for your service. So the book so far has taught me that my problem is lack of power and that the solution is access to power with a capital P. And now I'm about to begin the process of finding the things within me that are blocking me from that power. When I put the food down in step one, I start to see what my real problem is, which is this restlessness, irritability, and discontentedness. And that's fertile ground for the second part of the disease, which is the mental obsession. So as soon as I put the food down, the clock is ticking. I have to access that power as soon as I can. And this is the first action step in unblocking myself. And the book presents a very simple, structured, straightforward way of doing it. And what I've found is that no amount of, as the doctor's opinion says, frothy emotional appeal is going to encourage me to do it. A sponsor encouraging me, other fellows encouraging me, even the book encouraging me. The only thing that will encourage me to do it is the pain and suffering that the disease of compulsive overeating has caused. So when my fear of the disease exceeds my fear of taking this step, then I will do it. And that's what happened. And when I did it, it was an amazing first step, really, in that sort of spiritual experience. And I got recovered, and I'm grateful for that. Thank you very much for listening.
Oh, thank you, Stephen G. from Toronto, Canada. Thanks very much for sharing. So next up we have Raquel, and then we'll see if there's any time left. There should be a little time left. Raquel, just give us your last initial and location. Go right ahead with your share. Good morning.
Yes. Hello. Hi, Sandy. Thank you for your service and your kind way that you're doing it in so gracefully. My name is Raquel E., and I'm calling from Israel. And, wow, all of you, all these shares are so incredible, but I'm still working on absorbing yesterday's special. Was so special that I want to first thank all those, the panel of yesterday, because it helped me exactly in this, in my fourth step now. It's just the way God orchestrates the whole thing is unbelievable. I was tremendously helped by yesterday's and today with all these wonderful shares. I put my timer on, but please help me, Sandy, because I tend to explain everything to everybody who doesn't run away fast enough. Here, step four explains to me so well why I don't stand the chance of a snowball in hell if I don't really do this and do this in a way regularly. And I'm going through a hard time now after my operation because all I have here a brother and a sister, but they just don't have what I need from them. It's like going to buy milk in a hardware store, as we say. However, there are a lot of other nice people around, neighbors, friends, program, all the people who, right now, you're my family. And this step is so, so important because it helped me discover my part where it says, in the next page, it says that in that state, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. Kill means to live for the food people. We don't usually end up under the bridge with an empty bottle on a rainy day, but we have such inner turmoil that you can hardly call it a life. And for me, it was an awful lot of righteous indignation, self-pity. I call that self-pity a counterfeit bill, money. It's like you weren't loved. You don't know how to love yourself. So the next best you can do is feel sorry for yourself. And that just drags you down even more. It was a beautiful thing that I heard yesterday about only God can build the bridge of that tremendous, over the tremendous gap between what I needed as a child and what I was actually given. But I don't know how God made it possible for me at age 13 to choose different and to leave that home that was toxic for me. And there were children's villages in that time as kids started coming out of the Holocaust and Holocaust families. And I received parents there who really cared about me, and I received high school education. Yes, thank you, sweetie. But the main thing is that it's still an ongoing process, as it says, when these crop up, when the self-pity comes again because it's a new situation. And again, to go back here and to go back to my loving family, which is all the people online. Thank you, Sandy, and thank you, all my friends out there. And I pass.
Oh, thank you, Raquel E. from Israel. Thank you so much for that share. So we have a minute and a half left. Would anyone like to take that?
Cheryl S.?
Cheryl S., go right ahead.
I didn't hear how many minutes I have. I'm sorry.
You have just over a minute now.
Okay, great. Okay, I'll try to. Thank you very much, moderator, and the shares ahead of me and the timekeeper. I try to be quick. But this page is really good for me. Step four, I thought about my family of origin, and my cousin got married. She's my first cousin, and I wasn't invited. And what I think about in my inventory is that, you know, accepting the fact that they don't like me very much. I was the scapegoat in the family. And I'm not really crazy about them either. And I've been practicing detaching from them since I've been in recovery over 25 years. And finally have gotten to a point where I'm just almost completely detached. And I think they're not happy about that and triggered about that, as I am right now, that I wasn't invited, but triggered because they don't have anyone to pin the tail on the donkey anymore. I was the scapegoat, and whenever I used to go around them, you know, I was riddled with sarcasm and snark remarks about myself and my past mistakes. They wouldn't let them die. And so every time I would go around them, I was triggered, but I kept going year after year, detach, go back. I call it my lion's den because, and each time I would go back, I was mauled. And I finally stopped. Thank you. I'll wrap it up. So anyway, I finally stopped going and, you know, take better care of myself. So, you know, I'm here. I'm in grief and I'm strong today, much stronger. I feel the grief. But I'm not going to, I'm at a point now where I don't have to go eat ice cream or create chaos in my life as a result of it. Thank you, God, for recovery. I pass.
Oh, thank you, Cheryl S., for wrapping us up today. Before we get go ahead with our closing, I just again want to thank Team Monday, Martha M., Dori P., Eileen M., Deb E., Lois P., Lorraine N., and Leslie M. Thank you all so much for your beautiful service. And now we'll close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So, will Deb E. please read a vision for you? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Good morning, Deb.
Good morning. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.